As I said earlier, I'm going to be speaking this morning on the subject of Christian faith and our attitude to government, and to some degree politics too. And I'm aware that for some at this point, your heart will sink, or you'll just be about to tune out of what I say for the next few minutes. Maybe because you're convinced that religion and politics don't in any way mix. Or it could be because you're adamant you don't come to church to be told who to vote for. Or maybe for the opposite reason, that you suspect, rightly as it happens, that you'll be getting a sermon which refuses to come down on one side or another, and you think hearing from someone sitting on the fence is a bit of a waste of time. Or maybe you're just bored of politics, and like Brenda from Bristol in 2017, when that election was announced, you thought, not another one. All of which means the next few minutes will be of relevance, particularly only to those who aren't in one of those previous categories, which may mean about three of you. Although perhaps can I encourage those who don't warm to my subject at least to stay with me as we draw together some starting points from our Bible readings, from which we can spell out three important principles, beginning with the truth that government is a gift of God. The Apostle Paul puts it even more strongly, Romans chapter 13 and verse 1. Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Some people struggle with that principle, even in a democracy, especially when the party in power isn't the one they voted for. And there can be even more serious questions about what's said there when we see totalitarian regimes oppressing their people. Can we really believe that those kind of governments have been appointed by God? I suspect we'd need to qualify that truth. But we might notice that even the worst form of leadership may well be better than having no effective government at all. Many of us will remember in 2003 when Saddam Hussein was ousted by the Americans as president of Iraq. And as a clear image of what was happening, the giant statue of him at the center of Baghdad was toppled. There was, however, no workable plan as to what kind of government to put in instead. And 13 years later, the Iraqi citizen who'd been most prominent in the events of the day was actually at the top of the procession, at the top of the statue, knocking it down, gave an interview in which he spoke for many of his countrymen. Its headline, I toppled Saddam's statue, now I want him back. Saddam Hussein's regime had been responsible for killing many of that same man's family. But, he said, now we have 1,000 Saddams competing for power, which he was convinced was even worse. The writer of Romans, the Apostle Paul, similarly had no illusions about the Roman Empire who controlled the region where he lived and worked. They had imprisoned many Christians for their faith, probably by the time of this letter, including Paul himself. And yet he recognized that even that government brought good nonetheless, and could be seen, at least in part, as a gift of God. And if that could be said of a regime which persecuted believers, then however strongly we disagree with the politics of the party in charge, we must accept that at least in some elements of what they do, they are that gift from God himself. And I believe that should lead us to be more charitable towards our politicians. These days it's becoming more and more common to sneer, they're only in it for themselves. And of course plenty of MPs and local councillors have given significant warrant for that accusation in the past with their inflated expensive claims. It's apparent too that many enjoy the limelight and the prestige of their office. Most of us do a job, at least partly, for what we get out of it in some way ourselves. That's human nature. And I think that shouldn't cause us to lose sight of the truth that if government is a gift of God, then that there are people who are willing to stand for office is something we should be very grateful for. They have to deal with a lot of flack, not all of which is justified. And I think Christians should think very carefully about joining in with the broad brush cynicism and abuse directed at those who represent us. There is, after all, always the option of nominating someone else to stand as our MP. Or if we're convinced that we could do a better job and are willing to put up with the many downsides of the role, we're permitted to stand for election ourselves. It's not that difficult in local elections, especially. So because government, even when inevitably it's undertaken by flawed individuals, is a gift of God, I'd say that means even politicians should be regarded as a gift of God. Then secondly, because government is from God, our duty before the Lord is, in general at least, to be good citizens. Verse 1, let every person be subject to the governing authorities. Verse 2, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. And then more specifically from verse 6, for because of this you also pay taxes, for the authorities are ministers of God attending to this very thing. In those days, most of the taxes that the Romans extracted from subject nations like the Jewish people weren't actually to pay for a health service and state education and support for those unable to work. They were primarily to fund the army that was imposing Roman rule against the people's wishes. And yet Paul still tells his readers they should pay what is due. Echoing Jesus, of course, who, when challenged on the same issue, began his reply, render unto Caesar, give back to Caesar what is Caesar's. So as Christians today, we must surely pay our taxes, even when we disagree with how some of them are used. And more generally, Paul is speaking in Romans 13 of the Christian's normal duty to obey the law of the land. I guess there aren't that many anarchists here in the Westlands who'd seriously dispute that anyway. But notice as well, in both of our readings, there are indications of a third key principle, that the believer's final accountability is to God. Romans 13 returns to the language used earlier in that same book of God's wrath against those who disobey him. And Jesus may have begun his reply, so give back to Caesar what is Caesar's, but he went on to add, and give back to God what is God's. The first Christians very soon faced a head-on clash between the commands of God and that of their government when they were ordered by the authorities to stop preaching. But they refused to comply, spelling out that where there's that kind of clash of instructions, their conviction was, we must obey God rather than men. And that provides a strong precedent, under some circumstances at least, for Christians to follow the same line of thought. So, what principles might govern the way a believer votes? As you'll know, the Bible doesn't give a specific answer for the obvious reason that in that time, no one had a vote. Nonetheless, as you'll know, a proportion of believers are nonetheless absolutely convinced that being a true Christian must lead to a particular political conviction. In the UK, I suspect those on the left are slightly more likely to feel that way, that all believers should really vote as they do. Though interestingly, in the US, in many churches, there's the opposite presumption that being a good Christian means being a paid-up Republican. Others react against either approach by suggesting that what a believer thinks about faith should have no relation at all to their political convictions. Sometimes the words of Jesus we're looking at today seem to support that understanding. But as we begin to finish, I want us to look at a video clip which strongly disagrees with that approach. As you saw at the end, that clip is made by an organisation called Christians in Politics, which includes Christians from all of the main political parties. And the reason it includes so many and such a wide spectrum is because, despite being Christians, they are not agreed on which political programme fits best with their Christian faith. What they are united on, and it's a view I'd very much commend too, is the conviction that we must in some way make connections about our faith and what we vote for. And one way we might do that is to make sure we're not just asking which party will do best for me, but which party will be best in our opinion for the common good. And with an eye especially for those who are struggling. That means not just to what is best for our country, though that is of importance, but also the impact of what a future government do on how we as a relatively rich nation might impact the rest of the world as well, including much of the world which is very poor. The video makers' campaign is called Show Up, encouraging people to consider getting actively involved in politics. And maybe there are some here for whom that could be a possibility. Not as a sidetrack to take you away from Christian faith, but as a way of working out how your values and ideals and how the faith you hold as a Christian might translate into how our country, our county, our borough is run. The starting point for all of us, though, is to think about politics as a believer, and of course, to vote next week. Amen. We turn in our songbooks to number 17, which expresses a commitment to serve God in every different aspect of our lives. Here I am, wholly available.